And the irony is where their hatred's
coming from.
And the irony is they have $30 billion that has never been put back into Iraq. It's somehow disappeared.
Yeah, that's irony, isn't it? What about all the oil money that's supposed to come in, you know? Where's that going? You know, it's just like right now, gas prices are up so high. Do you know that today, last month, last year, there was more oil pumped per day than there was in the history, the last, what, 20 years of history? Because when they opened up the Iraqi oil wells, that just created more oil flow into the United States. But yet, gas prices are still sky high.
Yeah.
You know, what is going on with that? How, you know, the laws of supply and demand dictate that when supply is high, it outweighs the demand, the price per capita goes down.
Record profits right now.
So how can they testify, we're not using no more gas than what we were using 10 years ago?
Uh-huh.
You know, we're not using no more. If we're using more gas, I'll tell you how it is. It's from running missions, meaningless bullshit missions in Iraq, and burning the shit up over there, and not accomplishing nothing.
Well, they had a convoy of 60 fuel trucks get attacked today, and 20 of them burned completely, and I think they only had 10 that actually were able to carry the rest of the load up. The rest of them got fragmented and blown holes, and, you know, they didn't burn, but they lost all the gas. And,
yeah.
You know, there's, from what I saw in the news report, that was a 2-month supply for Baya, for Baghdad Airport.
Okay.
So where's the gas going to come from now?
Yeah.
You know, the whole background of the report was nobody knew where that gas had come from, whether it was Iraqi, you know, refined gas, whether it was from Turkey, and it was in a Halliburton KBR convoy, so KBR said they don't have to reveal the source of the gasoline. They just buy the cheap.
It came from Kuwait.
Came right out of Kuwait. I bet you money it did.
Everything, all the gas, all the fuel comes through Halliburton and Kuwait. They are making bunkers of money. Halliburton, you know, they set it up where, you know, when I was 10 years ago, or 12, 15 years ago, whatever it was, back in 1989 when I first went in the military, you know, as a 12 or 11, 11, 12 Bravo, you know, you learn stuff like that, how to pitch a tent, set up camp, set up a perimeter, do guard duty, take care of your camp, you know. When I was there in Kuwait, they had contracted it out. And these, you know, they're paying people, you know, there's no more mess hall as far as a military army mess hall. It was a civilianized mess hall.
Right.
And, you know, I'm like, my God, you know, you take the ability for the military to do this on its own, you take that away from them, you're not going to have a military.
Nope.
You know, they've got to be able to do everything on their own. And they have contracted it out, and I've never heard of this being contracted out like this before. And this is a new era type of war, you know, where they're contracting this stuff out. They're not saving money, they're blowing money.
Oh, they're blasting it out, because I saw the efficiency report last year, and they were, the Army said if they had to run the program at twice the budget as they had before that, they would have still been like 300% under what Halliburton charged.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm not Republican and I'm not Democrat. You know, I'm for going to war and fighting the war over there, keeping our kids safe. One of the main things that turned me to going back in the military and saying, you know what? If I have to go to war, then I'm gonna do the best job I can. I'm gonna serve my country. I'm gonna be proud to do it. I saw a news bulletin on CNN or Fox News or something, and they're talking about the children in Israel. You know, they're getting so many attacks, terrorist attacks over there, that the children of Israel, the number one most important thing they carry to school with them every day is a chemical mask.
Yeah.
Because they are dead serious that they think they're going to be chemically attacked. And I thought to myself, I looked at my little boy and thought to myself, my little boy carrying a chemical mask to school. Hell no. My children are going to be safe in school if I've got to go reports like that about Israel and how terrorists are basically dictating the third world country now, I wanted to be able to step up and keep it from coming over here. If it means dying over there, I'm going to die over there to keep my children safe over here.
Yeah, and you know, to go to do that, your duty being based upon that and to come back home and be screwed is just... It's just beyond even sickening, you know.
It destroys you as a human being.
Yeah, it's got to be the most demoralizing thing I could probably ever think of going through.
But before, you know, you sit there and talk about, you know, I talked to one guy the other day, he's talking about making, since the VA's not doing it, that they want to dual privatize it and individuals come together and make a retreat and PTSD center and stuff. I'm like, listen to what you're doing. Listen to what you're doing. You're talking about doing something that shouldn't even be talked about. You're talking about doing something that should be a given, that should be a fact, should be a done deal for our troops coming home.
Yeah.
Instead, you're talking about inventing something that they have the capability and already have established, but they refuse to use it. And adequately give the veterans the access to it. You know, I sent an email out about PTSD. I had one guy come back to me and tell me, you know, email me and say, well, what do you know about PTSD? You know, or what do you not know about PTSD? When's the last time you was able to convince somebody to get into a help group? And I emailed him back. I said, listen, buddy, if you've got access to getting into a treatment center with the VA, help for PTSD, you better jump on it, because we don't have that access. We don't have that ability. It is a privilege, and you better take all granted of it, because we're not getting that privilege. We've got to fight for it. We've got to get attorneys and beg for it.
Yeah, and the irony is that a lot of these guys with, like, you know, a lot of the different vet groups are really seeing the fact that because the VA is not doing it, they're going to have to do it on their own, and they're getting so pissed off. That, like they had a conference down here in Miami, Florida, on December 8th about that, how to take each, you know, hometown area or, you know, a local area and wherever these guys were from, and basically have to circumvent the VA system so that these guys, the day they came home from the war, could walk in the front door and say, look, I just came back. How do I get back to my normal life? Where are the steps to go through? If I need counseling, who do I see? Because you don't get that coming home from the VA. You know?
Yeah.
And it's sickening that these troops and vets have to start it up on their own in order to have somebody seen within a couple weeks after coming home from the war, you know, because there's a guy in Texas that's starting it out there. And that's his whole purpose, is if you come home, you need to be able to step in the door the first day, because if you don't, the problems will start and you might not get any help because you're going to be so scared it's going to get worse. You know, that should never have to happen. The VA should be on that from the first minute you come home.
Well, you know, something else too that you haven't, we haven't addressed or even touched base with on this, is that a lot of veterans are coming home and they're basically being shoved a, you know, nose down their throat, you know, and they're scared. They're scared. I know, you know, my father's a Vietnam veteran, and he has service-connected diabetes to the Agent Orange, and they raised him at 50% about 3 years ago because he's diabetic. 3 shots a day, 36 pills a day for everything else. His eyes have gone bad. His kidneys have already started acting up on him. They've had a heart attack about 6 months ago. And his blood sugar has never been nominal. His blood sugar is supposed to be 90 to 120. Yesterday I checked his files for the past year. Out of the entire year, his blood sugar has been nominal, but white. It has been anywhere from 195 to 500.
Wow.
And it's uncontrollable diabetes. And every time his blood sugar's up like that, which is all the time, it's doing permanent and irreversible damage to his body.
Oh.
And he's going blind from it. He is starting to have problems with his limbs, his appendages, and he does not live a very good life at all.
Hey, hold on just a second.